So let's go back a ways. How did the Catfish Bend series begin?
Well, I was a novelist, you see, and my wife was my illustrator. And one day she said to me, "Look, I'm tired of just being an artist that does chapter headings. I want some scope." So I said, "Okay, I'll give you some scope." And I dreamed up the Catfish Bend stories. But I said to Alice, who was my wife, "Don't expect very much out of these. If we sell 6,000 or 8,000, we'll be lucky." They are now in 11 languages around the world. They're over 1.25 million. And the Scrabble people have made a beautiful Catfish Bend game. And Ed Padula, who did Bye Bye Birdie, is just waiting to do a Broadway musical. And we've had film, well, I actually have sold it to one of the companies, but we're having contract difficulties right now. And so it's just run away with anything I've ever done.
When did the first Catfish Bend book come out, and what was the title?
1952. It was called High Water at Catfish Bend, and it was a satire on government inefficiency. You see, I'm an old, tough newspaper man, so I'm a very satirical guy. I think I'm a cynical optimist or a genial cynic. I think you can take it either way, and these are satires on the human race. High Water was a satire on government inefficiency. Let's see, the next one was 7 Stars for Catfish Bend. That's a satire on hunting. The next one was a satire on dictatorship. That was called, let me see, I can't remember the titles of my own books. The Owl Hoots Twice at Catfish Bend.
How many books in all of the Catfish
series? Six, and there'll be a 7th one out next April, and that will be called, let me see, that is called Thunderbolt at Catfish Bend, and you'll be surprised, and any reader will be surprised, to see on the cover a statue of Shiva, the Indian god, the creator, destroyer, you know, the one with about 15 arms, because I take them to India, and they try to reform India and get into awful trouble.
Of course, you had written extensively novels long before Catfish Bend.
Oh, yes. My first novel came out in 1929, and that was called Mississippi, and that was filmed by Universal with Lou Ayres. And then, of course, I did Steamboat Round the Bend in 35 with Will Rogers, and, oh, Lord, I've had half a dozen. But I don't remember my own books. It's very funny. I was, an extraordinary thing happened. In the war, I had the big German bestseller, a translation of My Blow for a Landing, which won a prize here. And so I was invited over as the first Allied author. And I was in Berlin, and of course there was a bit of publicity, and the waiter said in my little hotel, Berlin was as flat as its table, and he said, "What is this about this book, Der große Sturm, my brother? That is not a new book. I read that book in the war." And I said, "You're absolutely right. It isn't a new book." And then I was fascinated to find a simple German that I could discuss my book with, you know. And he said to me, "Now I like dot scene so and so and so and so." And I said, "I beg your pardon. That isn't in Blow for Landing. That's in another book." He said, "Dot is in Der große Sturm." And the joke is that he was right and I was wrong.
That is not unusual. I had, when William Anchester was here a year or two ago, he had just written a memoir. And I asked him about a scene in the book and involving one or two characters. I mentioned their names. And he had just, this book had just come out. This is a brand new book. And he looked at me, he said, "No, I don't remember that." And I opened up the book, and all of a sudden it came back to him. But he, too, had the same thing in his own book. He couldn't remember that scene or those characters and their names.
Yeah, it's love them and leave them, you know. You go on to the next one.
How did you develop such a preoccupation with the Mississippi?
Well, that's very logical. I was born in a small town on the Ohio in Kentucky, which, and the Ohio was then really the Mississippi. The Mississippi, the river was Pittsburgh to New Orleans in those days.
Could you hang on just one moment, Mr. Burns?
Yes, surely.
You got me very nervous. I'm sorry.
Are we off there for a minute?
No. They were getting ready. Casper Weinberger is about to hold a news conference.
Oh, I see.
On Grenada, and they were setting up in there. I got a little nervous that I was afraid our tape might be disturbed. But anyway, let's go back. Why, again, your preoccupation with the Mississippi?
Well, as I said, was very logical. I was born in a river town, which is now... practically, it's opposite Cincinnati, and it is now not at all the town that I grew up with. I'm very fond of Covington, Kentucky. And so I knew river people from my earliest childhood. Then I went off to college and came back, and the river there was not the way that I had known it. It had become industrialized. So then I went down to New Orleans, Memphis, and the lower river. I became a Cub pilot in 1927 and continued on the Tennessee Belle off and on till about 1938, when she sank in the Mississippi, as all old steamboats used to.
When did you find time to practice the art of journalism?
Well, when I say I was a Cub pilot, I'd go on for, you know, a month, six weeks, something of that. So don't get the idea that I was a Mark Twain pilot. I was a terrible pilot, but I did it, you know, to learn the river and really know what I was talking about. I remember one night I was all alone in the pilot house on what they call the graveyard watch, 3 o'clock in the morning, and in this black river. And my wife came up and saw me alone at the wheel running this big steamboat, and she had such a shock she never recovered.
Where did you go to college? College. Where did you go to school?
I went to Harvard.
You went to Harvard and knew.
I graduated in 1920. I should have graduated in 17, but I'm one of those people that got all involved in the war. I thought it was wonderful to go off and die for your country. I was hit in the Second Battle of the Marne, and that changed my life. I was flat on my back for a year and a half, and on crutches and cane till about 1924. But I'm very tough. My doctors tell me, then I was in the Second War as a correspondent in Africa. I had the fun of discovering the Free French and came back and attacked the Vichy policy and the Vichy. I had the fun of exposing the Vichy government. That's when I did some broadcasts for Elmer Davis.
You threw some cold water on the Vichy.
Yes, oh, very, very much. That was a very hot time. And we trekked from I heard of this man named LeClaire, a captain, and we trekked from Brazzaville in the French Congo up to the Chad where they're fighting now. It took us 48 days, and great fun.
Tell me a little bit about this very special day last October, earlier this year, this month, I guess.
Yes, October.
Tell me a little bit about that. That was a real Ben Berman day, huh?
Oh, that was great fun. I've never had... You see, it was really quite fun. Nobody took it seriously, the way this happened. You see, Catfish Bend exists in my mind only. As far as I know, it's the only creation making real an imaginary place in this country. I think in Europe, I think there is a plaque saying Sherlock Holmes lived here on Baker Street, and I believe in Dublin there's one saying that some incident of James Joyce's Ulysses happened here. But I don't know of any in America. Maybe we started something.
Well, where's the plaque?
The plaque is on at the entrance to this new park. It's a memorial to a battle in the Civil War. It's 15 miles north of Baton Rouge. And it was great fun. Governor Treen of Louisiana made it Catfish Bend Day, and I'm a Kentuckian, so the governor of Kentucky was very nice, and he made it BLB Day. And we had the Coast Guard, the navigation light at Baton Rouge is named for me, because this was years ago, and you see, when I first wrote about the river was dead, and nobody ever dreamed of the writing about the river. As a matter of fact, I remember going down to Memphis and telling a taxi driver, "I want you to take me down to the Harry Lee." And he turned to me and he said, "Brother, there ain't been no steamboat operating around here for 50 years, and I said, "Take me down to the wharf," and there the steamboat was waiting. You see, the river had been forgotten. So the rivermen were very nice, and they think I made America river conscious, which is a nice, very nice thing for them to say.
Both you and John Hartford. You know John Hartford, the folk singer? Hartford, the folk singer?
He
writes about the Mississippi River, and he's a steamboat. Yeah, he's got a license to pilot a steamboat. I think he's on the Delta Queen?
The Mississippi Queen.
Julia Ann Bell. No, Julia Ann Swain.
Oh, yes.
The Julia Ann Swain.
I remember the old Swain, yes. That's where I'm so familiar with your name.
Although my name is not the same. It has an M rather than an N. Ben Berman, I'm going to ask you one other question. You went to India recently to ride elephants. Actually, I guess it's a two-pronged question. Why did you go to India to ride an elephant? And what was this incident I hear about regarding a tiger?
Well, I've been to India four times, and I love India. You really love India or you hate it. And I've gotten very fond of elephants. They're marvelous animals. I could sit here for hours telling you stories about elephants, but I'll tell you about the tiger. So we were out on an elephant one day, a friend and myself, a member of the tourist board, and I saw the track of this enormous tiger. And I said, "Let's follow him." So the Mahout, the driver, it is pronounced Mahout, not Mahout. I always thought it was Mahout, but I was sternly corrected. So I said, let's follow him. So the elephant plunged into the jungle, the track led into the jungle, and pulled down trees and branches. You have to put your hands up in front of your eyes so you don't get hit by the branches coming back. And we followed him for about two and a half hours, no sign of him. Suddenly our elephant trumpeted, and that meant tiger. And all the monkeys around began to scream, that meant tiger. But we didn't find him that day. The next day we went out in the same area, this time on a young elephant, and back into the jungle, another 2 hours. Suddenly we emerged from the jungle into the clearing, and there was this magnificent Bengal tiger about as big as this table, drinking very calmly, paid utterly no attention to us. This young elephant was frightened, and being frightened, he decided to try to bluff the tiger. So he charged the tiger with us on his back. Fortunately, the driver got him stopped before he got right on the tiger, and the tiger walked off, just turned his head contemptuously, walked off. We followed him for about 15 minutes till he disappeared in the jungle. But that's great fun.
You came back with from India, no doubt, with loads of ideas for future stories for the Catfish Bend series, and I know that your readers are going to be looking forward to the new one. It comes out when? The new one will come out when?
The new one will be out in April next year.
Next April, next year.
And it will be called Thunderbolt at Catfish Bend.
There will be a line of Doubleday waiting to buy it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you so very much.
Most interesting. You've really had an amazing background. I think you put more action in your life than most people conceive of.
Well, you know, I knew Lowell Thomas very well. Lowell was a very dear friend. And Lowell always wanted me to join the Explorers Club. But I said, look, I'm not a real explorer. I'm just a 10-cent store explorer. But I guess I have more than any writer. Of course, Lowell wrote a lot of books, but he never considered himself a writer. He was an explorer. And I guess I probably... I've had a lot of fun, let's put it that way.
You sure have.
So thank you so much.